Welcome to Conversations with Achievers. I'm your host, Robert White. I'm a mentor to owners, executives, and their teams, and CEO of Extraordinary People, LLC. I work with people that want to create extraordinary business performance with less stress, more joy, and more personal fulfillment. So sit back, relax, and prepare to learn from your peers as we explore what it takes in terms of attitudes, habits, and behaviors that achieve extraordinary results. Results for yourself, for your family, and your community. Hello and welcome to Conversations with Achievers. Jeremy Peace is with us today and sharing a bit about his journey and hopefully of value to you. So tune in, relax, have a drink of your favorite beverage, and let's get into it. Jeremy, welcome to Conversations with Achievers.
Thank you, Robert. Appreciate the opportunity to be with you today.
I'm past the point of being impressed by your beard, so I think we can just jump into it. Why don't you share a little bit with our audience about your life and your journey to an executive level?
Yeah, absolutely, Robert. Appreciate, again, the opportunity to do. And in all honesty, I always say mine is not the path that I would suggest anybody take to get to this level, but it is an interesting one for sure as I look at it. I did not go to college right out of high school. That was not the path for me. And so I started corporate jobs at the age of 19. And by 21, I was doing development work at Microsoft out in Seattle. And so obviously technology had been a huge piece for me, something I had been interested in as a kid. And so I dove headfirst into technology. But I'd say after about 6-7 years of programming, I realized that I was not meant to sit behind a desk programming all day long, and that I wanted to be out there more interacting with other people and whatever aspect that meant. Now, did I have aspirations of being here one day? When they asked me what I wanted to be when I grow up, and I don't know, one of these days I'll grow up, I'm sure, but I said that I wanted to be a C-level executive at a technology company. It's what I said I wanted to be. And as I got into my career, I thought, man, it would be great one day to be a COO. I love operations. I love the way things operate. I love the technology in it. And to me, it's always the backbone of an organization in terms of its success. And so I worked my way up working jobs from developer, help desk, project manager, managing development teams, managing infrastructure teams, and really built a career off of being able to understand both the networking and infrastructure as well as the development. And I think that's what led to a lot of my success, and probably success happening a little earlier than some, is just because I was able to get those teams within a room in major, you know, pivot points in terms of a technology project. And they just would say, there's no way we can figure out a solution to this. And I would help them. I would say, all right, what do you need, development team? They would give me all their asks. All right, what do you need, infrastructure and networking team? They'd give me all their asks. And I find a way to pull that together. And that success just continued to build on itself in working this level of infrastructure and development. And after working all these different parts of a career, I did some recruiting. I built a recruiting firm for a DC-based government consulting firm, really just worked my way up. And then in management, I excelled very quickly in terms of moving from a director role all the way through to a VP role to a COO role rather quickly. And honestly, a lot of that was just due to mentoring of some great mentors in my life that have had a huge impact on where I am today. But also, coaching was just natural within me. It's what I always wanted to coach. And even when I was programming early in my career, I was working early shifts, 6 a.m. to 2:30, to be able to go and coach high school sports as an adjunct coach in the afternoons, and then coaching select sports in the evenings. Coaching and watching people build and grow has always been a part of that. So brings me to where I am today, working through that executive journey, and now I'm the CEO. I didn't think that was anything I ever wanted, but once I became a COO, I said, I still don't have the impact on the organization I want to have. And so I worked with my mentors to say, what do I need to do to build the career towards being a CEO one day? And fortunately, 2.5 years ago, almost 2.5 years ago and a week, I got the opportunity to be the CEO of what was formerly a company called Colo House. And last year, we acquired a company called High Velocity. And we just in January consolidated everything down into the High Velocity name and enjoying the journey of being a data center cloud hosting provider to the managed services space of cloud and data center hosting.
That's a great company name, by the way, High Velocity. That's got some action in it. I love it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why we wanted to take it on and make it the new company name for sure.
Good choice, I think. Look, you've been an employee who's jumped a bit from job to job. You mentioned that you had good coaching and good mentors. Was there like a major turning point for you, a time when somebody taught you something or experience taught you something that really lives for you today and helps you with your work?
Yeah, absolutely. I think when I made the transition into what is the data center space, I had been on the other side of it, running a lot of components of the business and interacting with data center and cloud providers. But when I made that transition, my first mentor that came in and started to build things for me, I was struggling with impact on an organization. And we were a struggling organization, to be honest. I had to come in and essentially cut a certain amount of money from the budget the first 3 years with that organization. And it's always challenging. Where are you going to cut? And there's things you can cut in technology, but then it becomes personnel. And I was really struggling with what that meant as a leader, being able to do that and understanding how to make the right decisions for the organization and for the people as well. And my mentor at the time, a gentleman by the name of Art Zaley, he really walked me through, this is what you got to keep in mind, is that even though this is going to impact some, it's for the greater good of an organization. And I think that's one thing that has helped me when I look at, I've done a number of acquisitions and integrations and all of that. It really is considering the greater good of an organization and understanding that people first doesn't always mean that it has to be every person in an organization. There are times where you got to make tough choices. But at the end of the day, understanding that you're thinking about the greater good for the organization is important in those decisions. So I think that was very pivotal for me. And it's had a lot to do with why I've had success in these different organizations, helping them integrate companies and pull them together while still trying to build a positive culture.
Wow. That notion of what some people might call being hard-nosed, but I think it's actually caring about, first of all, the survival of the company, but also the thriving of it. And one of the things I've learned in working with teams is that people really judge you. The people in your organization judge you when you don't make those kinds of decisions that they know need to be made. Even though they might have difficulty making that decision, they do expect you to and judge you when you don't make it in a timely way. And of course, I think all of us learn to be as compassionate as we can when making those tough choices and communicating them to teams. That's a great piece of learning and a great mentor to point that out to you.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's definitely been, as you said, I think a lot of times within any organization of any size, there are team members who probably aren't accordingly carrying their weight and not seen within those teams. And like you said, when you're not making those decisions to hold people accountable, that's one thing. But then when there is this need to be efficient and be smart about what we're doing and that being a path forward for the organization, people do judge you if you don't make those decisions quickly. And I think that was another one that I learned from another mentor of mine in one of my roles. Was he was a great coach, executive coach, and coaches for some large organizations. But as a CEO, he always preached culture over results. And I was like, oh, that's great. I love that idea. Culture, if you do it right, it will drive results. But what that left us with is the inability to make decisions quickly. He would not want to upset one side because of the culture within an executive team. And that created a number of challenges where we sat in this uncertainty. And one of the phrases that I use consistently in my organization is fail fast and fail forward, right? We're going to fail at times. There's going to be challenges. It's just a matter of let's make those decisions quickly and let's move forward quickly. Because the longer we allow those bad decisions and those failures to permeate in the organization, it's only going to create a greater challenge. So yeah, it was a great lesson learned. And it just is, again, these different mentors that have helped in different ways learn some of these hard lessons of a word we talked about, which is resiliency, which I think is absolutely key.
The bumper sticker wisdom, and of course, all bumper stickers are suspect, right? But the wisdom is to hire slowly and fire quickly. And most of the time, it's wise counsel. Occasionally, you can violate that for some reason and it works out. But that those habits around decision making. Years ago, a client called me one day and said, this is an executive coaching client, and I was working with his team. And he said, do you have this morning free? And I said, I can make it free. What's up? And he said, there's one of these, I think it was called a Congress, or I think I would have called it a forum, a bunch of different famous speakers in a town north of Denver, Colorado. So it was a bit of a drive. And I thought, I get to spend some time with my client. And the speaker sounded interesting. The surprise speaker, the one I didn't even know was speaking, was the late Colin Powell, former general, of course, and Secretary of State. And he turned out to be the biggest surprise to me. And I remember he talked about his way of decision-making was, he called it 80% okay. But, you know, if he could get to 80% of the information he thought he needed around personnel issues or any kind of strategic decision, if he could get to 80%, he'd decide there and not wait for 100%. In working with teams recently, I see a lot of people, particularly people that have, frankly, a lot more education than you and I have, especially the MBA crowd, where the other bumper sticker, analysis paralysis,
yes,
sets in. And there's a little too much thought of all the things that you have to consider before you make a decision.
Yeah.
I think Colin Powell's advice that day, also I got to meet him briefly following the event and got his permission. And actually he sent me his overheads or his PowerPoint.
That's my deck.
I've stolen from it liberally over the years. So
I'm sure it was great. And that 80% rule is definitely something we live by in the organization. We also call it perfection is the enemy of progress, right? And we constantly say it does not have to be perfect for it to move forward. You know, we live by that 80% rule. So it's definitely a great mantra to live by, because if you wait for perfection, progress is going to be extremely slow. Love that.
Yeah, those kind of learnings for me have come in two ways. One is I have one semester of college, and then I had a heart attack, and that took me out of schooling at 19 years old. That's my excuse. But whenever I had the opportunity to go back, I didn't. Ultimately, I'm accountable for that. But most of my learning has come from experience, and particularly some bumps in the road. So I've had a lot of success, and I'm grateful for that. First to myself, but also just to the people that surrounded me and the people that supported me. But I've had a massive failure, very public and very embarrassing, but it's where I learned the most. How about you? Have you had that kind of an experience that woke you up to something?
Yeah, I think early in my career, regardless of having a degree or anything, as much as I enjoyed coaching on the side, I think in my one of my first couple of jobs was just thinking that I was irreplaceable, right? That there's so many people will feel like you just can't be replaced. And I did a number of things for that organization at the time that they could never seem to get past those hurdles and make those happen. And so felt like I was irreplaceable. And it wasn't that I was ever replaced. I actually left that company on my own accord. But there were multiple times where I just would go at my boss and then I'd say, I'm done here. And I give him all the credit in the world for him allowing me to come in the next day, apologize. But again, happened a couple of different times. And the final time he just said, Jeremy, I'm telling you, what you're going to have to learn in your career is that you are replaceable and that you cannot do this. And not that I fully understood at the time, but I never did that again. And I worked to learn and understand going forward how to be better about my interactions with management above, and this understanding that there's so many people out here in this world that can do this job. And it was part of a multiple learnings, because I got into the tech space in the late 90s when there was so many tech jobs available at the time, and they were just looking for anybody. And then I left a company before I went to this one that I was just speaking about. And those tech jobs dried up. And when I was out of that company, I spent time working in a trampoline factory. Like I had been making great money and working on site at Microsoft and doing all these things so early on in my career. And then I just went through these struggles of working the basic jobs. And even the job that I'm referring to is a major clothing brand on the high-end fashion side. But I started as a quality assurance associate. It wasn't programming, but they allowed me to start building things within that organization. But it was just those learnings both helped me understand that anybody's replaceable at any time. There's nothing you are bringing to the table that is making you so valuable that you can't be replaced. And it taught me the value of jobs and opportunities. And as you mentioned, I jumped around a lot. That company I was mentioning I was at for 5 years. And that's my longest stint to date, right, is 5 years. But it pushed me to realize that I knew I could do more. And that when the opportunity presented itself, I wanted to go do more and I wanted to provide more for my family. I didn't have a lot growing up, oldest of 8 kids in a 3-bedroom house. That's tough. And so I wanted my kids to have a different experience. And so I was always pushing myself to be better. And it's that competitive nature, but a lot of it came from the being humbled initially that there is a piece of you can be replaced. And so how do you push yourself to consistently be better, no matter if that's where you are or the next opportunity?
You know, that distinction between being confident versus being irreplaceable, it's a very fine line, I think.
Without that, confident versus cocky is a very fine line.
Without the confident part, it's pretty difficult to be in a leadership role at any level of the organization. But when you get to irreplaceable, that's the beginning of a down spiral. I had a mentor earlier in my career. I was what is today, I think it's called a fractional sales manager. But I was running a region, and my coach and kind of my boss came to town, and he was from the Deep South, and he had a lot of those Deep South mannerisms and language. And so I'm telling my victim story, and of course now I have a book and an entire teaching curriculum based on personal responsibility. So of course the irony was that I was a gigantic, sophisticated victim then. Victim of the company, right. Victim of the economy, victim. And right. So I'm telling him my victim story, poor me. And he used a very Southern expression that I'll never forget. He said, "Robert, I think you're fixin' to quit." Fixin' being the...
Oh, fixin'. Trust me, I'm a Texan. I get it. I know the word fixin' like nobody's business. I probably use it more than I should.
It's such a great word because it's vague and yet we all know what it means, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
We're arranging our universe to suit our belief system and with little or no connection to our current reality. Look, this has been a great conversation. I'd actually like to do it again and dig into some other areas. What about you? Do you have a request of our audience, mostly business people, entrepreneurial people in leadership roles? Do you have a request of them? How do they be in touch with you, or do you want them to be in touch with you?
Yeah, absolutely. I love networking, and that's why I love LinkedIn, is the opportunity to meet different executives and people in the space. And I use that really as a platform to connect with others and figure out how we can do business together. And a number of times those have turned into friendships more than business, and sometimes business more than friendships. This data center cloud hosting space has so many facilities and facets to it that whether it's cybersecurity or whether it's networking or whether it's computers or hardware or any of that, but there's so many pieces that we touch in terms of, you know, customers as well. So anybody that, you know, has a connection to this space and wants to connect and wants to either learn more or wants to find a way to work together, please do find me on LinkedIn. Again, Jeremy Pease. You can find me as CEO of High Velocity there. And just reach out. I'd love to connect and talk to other business owners. And if nothing else, share experiences and learn more from each other.
Said, in talking about velocity and really about the size and momentum of a company, at what point should a company start thinking about their own access to the cloud? Is there a size? Is there a revenue number? Who are your prospects?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say companies, as soon as they're starting to really build an application, even a website, or starting to actually try to get out there to the market and really trying to figure out how they're going to build an infrastructure for a company that may start small, but builds into something, doesn't really require a size. It's really a matter of where you are in your development as an organization. We have customers anywhere from $2 million in annual revenue all the way to Fortune 500 customers streaming things like Thursday Night Football and English Premier League, right? And so it really is just a matter of where are you in your cloud journey? And that's usually the discussion we want to have is what does a cloud journey mean for you? How can we help in that journey? Because especially smaller companies that are really trying to build and grow this, it's do I do that with a provider that can do so many things for me so I don't have to hire all these different peoples to do these different components? Or do I invest in the employees and have a provider to help us with the technology at the end of the day? So it's really just a matter of where are you at in terms of, because every company is going to have it. Technology is there in every way, shape, and form. How are you going to build your cloud portfolio for your company? How are you going to support the websites, applications, all the things that come with interacting with your customer base? And talking to a company like ours, we have so many different options for especially that small to medium-sized business to help them along that journey. And we can prescribe different things based on what you're looking for. And that's really why we built this company the way that we did with the product vision that we did, was to be able to be that one-stop shop for customers as they're trying to figure out that cloud journey again. And I probably used journey too many times, but there you go. We'll take that for what it is.
The growth of these programs that offer automation for so many different processes that are crucial to business today and save so much money. And frankly, it means that you don't have to hire as many people to get some things done. It's amazing. But I do, in listening to clients, people in growth companies get confused and frustrated with three or four different suppliers. Existing programs, the good news is they do exist, and you can get a start with them. But I really get your message about combining that and having a major relationship that gets built with somebody that can do a lot of those AI and automation things that require just a lot more computing power than we normally have in a small, medium-sized growth company. So thank you for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the best way to reach you is through LinkedIn. Jeremy,
yes,
Pease and High Velocity.
Yes, absolutely. Search Jeremy Pease High Velocity. You'll find me on LinkedIn. And like I said, we're fortunate at High Velocity to be over 50 data center locations across six continents. We have a global footprint and a global reach. And like I said, always just happy to, even if it's not about us, just have that conversation with somebody at the end of the day, because it's about building relationships. So please do reach out. More than happy to connect and talk about things.
Jeremy, thank you for today. It's been a delight. I've learned from you and really enjoyed it. I look forward to figuring out how we could do something together perhaps someday. That'd be great.
Sounds great, Robert. Again, I appreciate the time. It was great speaking with you as well.
All the best, and thanks again.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us for Conversations with Achievers. If you or someone you know would make a good guest for this weekly show, the details are at therobertwhite.com and click on podcasts. I'm looking for businessmen and women with a story to tell, stories that might benefit other owners and executives. If you got some value from this program, I'd really appreciate you sharing about it on social media and just mentioned www.therobertwhite.com/podcast. Of course, subscribing means you won't miss a show, and rating the podcast positively will leave Robert smiling. I'm building a movement here for leaders who want to succeed in business, succeed with their families, have fun, and contribute toward making the world a better place. It's special to me that you chose to listen. I look forward to connecting again next week. Remember, reach out to me anytime with any questions or concerns at therobertwhite.com. Bye for now.